This podcast is marketing material for a South Africa investment professional only.
Well, good day, everyone. My name is Kwandi Ngosi. I'm the country head for Schroders here in South Africa. And today I'm pleased to be joined by someone who is no stranger to South Africa, Benjamin Ault. Benjamin's the head of global private equity portfolios at Schroders Capital, the private markets arm of our firm. Benjamin, welcome to the Global Markets Perspective podcast.
Hi, good day, everyone.
We'll spend the next half an hour or so discussing developments within the private equity space. Benjamin, perhaps as a start, can you paint the picture for us of where the private equity industry is at the moment? I mean, we saw that capital raising in 2022 was somewhat challenged. How are things going so far in 2023?
Yeah, it's a great question to start with, but it's also quite a tricky one because we are in a complex world, not only in private equity. A lot of things are happening. There's a lot of uncertainty in the market, and here private equity is no different from other markets. It also shows some uncertainty and some slowdowns. But if we look at the numbers, and Kwandi, you're just asking about the capital raising, the fundraising market, that is always a good indicator for the overall shape and health of the market. We saw a drop. We saw a drop from 2021, which was an absolute record year, where roughly $1 trillion was raised in private equity globally, down to around $860 billion in 2022, which was a bit more than 10% drop. And if I look at the year-to-date numbers for 2023, where we are close to 400, if I just extrapolate that for the whole year, we probably see another cut of 10%. Now, if I look at those numbers in the overall context, and we would all agree that 2021 was an absolute record year, then the 2023 number probably is pretty much in line with what we have seen in 17, 18, 19, and so before we had that big jump in 21 and 22. So when we look at the fundraising numbers over the last years, and we look at 2021, which was an absolute record year, the overall market volume was around $1 trillion US dollar in fundraising volume. And when we compared it to 2022, where we had roughly $860 billion, that was a drop of close to 13%. And when we now look at this year, 2023, so far, $380 billion US dollar were raised. And if we extrapolate that for the full year, we will see another drop roughly in that range, 10 to 13%. That doesn't sound too significant. And also when I look and or think about then the $760 billion annualized for 2023 that we could reach, this is still pretty much in line with the fundraising numbers from 2017 onwards to that very active period in 2021. So yes, we have seen a slowdown, but from a high peak. And I think it is just good for the market to slow down also from time to time. And therefore, we are not too worried. But it was definitely a slowdown.
Benjamin, I suppose the other side of the coin when we talk about fundraising is deal activity. The backdrop of, you know, the challenged environment that you've painted, you know, growth concerns, inflation, interest rates, etc., makes, I suppose, the deal selection, you have to be much more selective in the kind of deals that you guys are looking at. What do you see in the form of deal activity? And then I'll have a follow-on after that regarding exits, but I'd be keen to hear your thoughts around deal activity.
That is absolutely the other side of the medal, and it's very important for us to closely monitor, because you want to have those both sides in a healthy balance. What we have seen on the deal side, similar to the fundraising side in 2021, also absolute record year in activity, and then 2022, a drop very much in line with the M&A market. And obviously the deal market is the M&A market, right? You also have like strategic selling parts of their businesses from one to each other, but private equity and the M&A market really pretty much go in line together, up and down. And there was a drop of a bit more than 20%. If we look at 2023 so far, the drop is more at around 40%, but we see now activity coming back. So unless there is a major event now over the last month or in summer, particularly maybe a bit slow, but then I still could see that activity picks up then towards the end of the year. And we will have another drop, but maybe not as much as 40%. But I think this is a clear sign that reflects the uncertainty in the market and the uncertainty, especially around will there be more correction in the market? Are the valuations that we're seeing now on the market, are they reflecting all the turmoil that we saw on the public side? People are still hesitant because they don't want to overpay. Of course not. And therefore, maybe some just sit and wait and hope for another correction downward and then get the right point to enter. We think that valuations are quite well reflected, or the private valuations are reflecting quite well the overall market at the moment, and the correction had happened. But I think we will also touch on that later.
Indeed, Benjamin, we will. Perhaps just before moving off deal activity, I mean, we've seen quite a lot of news flow around AI and particularly generative AI and all the excitement that's generated in the markets. Now, clearly, you know, we're seeing a lot of deal activity there. But to use that as a case study in terms of how you guys balance between finding the right assets at the right prices in interesting industries and managing the risk of potentially overpaying for these assets because things are overhyped. Maybe you can just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I think really deep in our DNA, we see ourselves and we've proven ourselves more on the value side when it comes to buyouts, where we like to buy companies from entrepreneurs, from families, direct access, direct sourcing, being like the first kind of institutional investor in those, financial investor in those companies, gets us really excited. Because in those type of business, it's about business transformation. It's about developing those companies into something that is more professional, leaner, better to understand, and makes it then a great target to sell off to larger private equity buyout firms, because we are more active at the long tail of the market, a small mid-market, or then sell off to a bigger strategic player who got really excited about the company. This is one part where we are really active in. And as I said, we are more on the value side. The other part where we have been very active in over the last 25 years is on the venture and growth side. And there, sometimes some sectors, subsectors, topics are highly hyped or are just at the edge in their development to become something very, very big. And I think this is what we currently see. And you mentioned it, Conny, is the AI space. It was the rise of the internet. It was moving stuff to mobile. I mean, there are themes every couple of years that really change the world a bit, and AI is definitely the big topic at the moment. Now, the fascinating point with AI and the companies that we see is that there is only a very limited number of people in the world today that can create something like ChatGPT, like here, and all the companies that we see now coming up. But you have to be careful here to enter at the right moment. We always have to assess what the real potential of those companies is in terms of growth. Because sometimes, I mean, price and growth, it's a very close relationship, right? If you grow very strongly, obviously you can pay more for a company. But you also have to be careful to really enter at the right time. And there, for example, our venture and growth investing activity happens more at the early stage. And that protected us, by the way, very well in last year, where the biggest valuation correction that we have been seeing in the market has been more in the later stage growth pre-IPO market, where we were not too active in, because there's higher risk in our view to come in at a too high valuation.
Benjamin, let's talk a little bit now about the exit activity that you guys are seeing in the markets. I mean, we've seen some analysts speak about private equity exit backlogs with exit values slumping below what markets endured back in the global financial crisis in certain markets like the US, for example. What's your near-term outlook for this, the exit activity, and how do you see the private equity markets reacting to this? For example, I mean, do we anticipate seeing a higher quantum of GP-led secondaries in this space? Your thoughts?
Definitely there is less exit activity. And I mentioned before, like the drop in deal activity. Drop in deal activity obviously means also drop in exit activity, right? Especially when you look at the overall M&A market, because in one of those stats, the exits have to appear or not. And this is clearly also a sign of uncertainty. Every time we have a shock in the market, it needs, like in our experience, half a year until especially the sellers get used to the new normal. If you run a family business for, I don't know, 50 years, second, third generation, and let's say investment bankers tell you, like, for years, your company is worth 14 times EBITDA, and then all of a sudden no one would like to pay that price, and it's more like the range of 10, 11, you're not necessarily willing to sell your business, right? So it takes maybe a year for you to adjust and then just accept this is the new normal, this is the new pricing, and maybe the price levels or the evaluation levels that we have seen before are not there anymore. And through that phase we are going. This is then when people slow down in terms of transacting, waiting, and wait to see how far it comes down. But I think we are now at a situation where we have seen down valuations reflected quarter over quarter, also in some products where you have even monthly valuations. Everything is reflected there. And when I look at the exits that we achieved last year in 2022. I think for us, a comfortable sign there was that we saw even a 20% uplift in the valuations book value compared to exit value, compared to the book value 3 quarters ago. So let's say you have an exit in Q4. How was the valuation in Q1? And there we saw even an uplift of 20%. There are years where we have seen higher uplifts, but just seeing an uplift means what is in your books is not necessarily overvalued, quite the opposite. It's a conservative valuation. And one thing that we also saw, and that becomes always very obvious in times of stress and uncertainty, is certain sectors or business in certain sectors can be sold much easier than in others. And that was a bit of an overarching trend over the last couple of years. A trend or more appetite towards asset-light business models. Often those business models also like more resilient companies, less cyclical companies, higher cash generation in those companies. And those companies still go for good valuations. Where you saw, on the other hand, the biggest cut and where you have been not getting like any good pricing in the process is for more the industrial side, capex heavy companies, because those are also suffered massively under the interest increase that we have been seeing, right? And if you want to use acquisition financing, some leverage in the buyout transactions, also the banks in these times are less willing to give you to provide leverage for those transactions, and then it's difficult to pay up, right? Because that would be pure equity, and that eats into your performance. So there is less equity, less exit activity, but also again, nothing that completely worries us at the time. I think we just have to get used to the fact that we go back to normal in a way. That a deal that is underwritten for 4 or 5 years will be maybe sold after 4 or 5 years and not after 2 or 3 years. I think that is just something we got used to the last years where the markets are extremely fast. It's just coming back to normal, I would say.
Thanks, Benjamin. Perhaps another question around the current environment that we find ourselves in. Now, you and the team have often spoken about the importance of a disciplined investment process and how that should in time yield solid results for our investors. The other thing that you guys have mentioned is in particularly tough economic and market environments, that is actually a good time for investors to be putting money to work. Could you just unpack that? What exactly do you mean by that? Why would such an environment be a good time for investors to be putting capital to work?
Yeah, let's start with the later one. The is now a good environment and why? Yes, it is, and of course I have to say that. We have data on that. So if we go back and we've analyzed all the downturns, all the recessions since the 80s until now, you could see it in the data that the vintage years in which you have a recession or a recession is starting or even the one afterwards are the most successful years. And there is a very, very simple explanation for it. We started the conversation about a fundraising market is slowing down. It's reducing. So that means less capital is chasing a similar amount of companies first and maybe also a bit lower, but there is less pressure in the market. There's just a better balance in terms of demand and supply, and that normally brings prices down. So that means you enter those businesses at more favorable valuations, and if you underwrite a deal for 4 or 5 years, 4 or 5 years later after recession, you're normally there, or hopefully there's an up market again where things look more rosy and prices go up. And if you did a good job on developing those companies, you get what we call like a nice multiple arbitrage on top, and that can drive returns quite strongly. That's the second part of your question. The first one about the investment process, I think a highly disciplined investment process is absolute key. We have been following really more or less the same process for the last 25 years. Of course, we changed it. Of course, we adjusted it a bit. But the overall idea is very much the same in a way that we follow that strict process in which we define the clear framework of what kind of businesses and characteristics of businesses we want to see in order to avoid mistakes. And the typical mistakes now would be overpaying, of course, would be buying into the wrong industry in terms of dynamics, not really understanding the whole value chain of industries. And therefore then also overestimating maybe the potential of a single deal. And here as a platform with Insurers Capital Private Equity, we have 6,000 companies on our platform where we are directly or indirectly invested. And that gives us a significant, massive pool of know-how and deep insights into industries, into businesses that we can use to benchmark business both operationally but also valuation-wise. And taking that data, using that also now with more and more AI, what you mentioned before, this is becoming really also big on the due diligence side, but then following always the same strict process, every investment professional, that is a good recipe for successful deal making.
Benjamin, one of the attributes of private equity that's put forward as a positive is the lack of volatility, at least in relation to public markets. Another way of looking at the same point is actually from a negative perspective, in that it is quote-unquote managed pricing. So let's talk a little bit about valuations now. There is a view that potentially private equity assets could be inflated at the moment in just how they've reacted to what's been happening in the economy. What's your view on this? Are we looking at asset prices that are inflated at the moment in the private equity space?
So to start with, I would say yes, there is absolute correlation between private equity markets and public equity markets, right? It's both equity long and why shouldn't be there a correlation in terms of performance? But what we saw when we did a lot of comparisons with our own data and the public markets is like the larger the companies become on the private side, the more correlation you will find with the public side, because the companies are becoming more and more similar. And especially when you invest in the long tail, small mid market, where we are very active in, maybe it just as an explanation here, we talk about enterprise values between 50 and 250 million US dollar at entry. This is our entry point. Those companies, when they are 50, 100 million in size, they probably are much harder to compare to any public stocks because often they are very innovative, disruptive. They're not necessarily 10 listed companies doing the same thing, right? If you look into the listed space, you often have very developed, very mature companies in very traditional industries. But the ones that become then larger and larger over time, then it's often easier to find comparables. And this is why they then also fluctuate a bit more in terms of up and down and more volatility. Also, the larger the deal size become on the private side, normally the more leverage is used. And also that leverage allows you to pay multiples, and we have seen in the past that in the range of enterprise value above 500 million US dollar, pricing fluctuates much more over the years than at the smaller end. At the smaller end, small mid market, it's quite stable, moving somewhere between 7 and 9 times EBITDA at entry, below 100 million in enterprise value. And that has a lot to do with the stable fundraising in that space, but also with the leverage. So now the big question is, are the companies now in the portfolios, are they heavily overvalued because they didn't correct so much? I think last year there was a quarter where there was maybe on a normal closed-end private equity portfolio, the valuations were maybe a bit high, but they then were also corrected downwards, similar like in the public markets. And I mean, in very simple terms, on the private side, the multiple that you use is derived normally from public peers. So you will always have a bit of a reflection or a reflection of the public market in your valuations. But what you don't have is kind of the emotional momentum of investors going in and out on the public side because they can. This is missing on the private equity side. The private equity valuation is pretty strictly following more the financials of the company. So if, let's say, your EBITDA goes up 20% and you leave anything else on the same level, the multiple, the net debt position and everything, your valuation should go up 20%. This is not necessarily the case on the public side if people just don't come back to the market or don't trust any industry or whatever. So you're taking just out the emotional element. People love private equity for not being as volatile as the public markets in a way, although that statement is difficult because often you only have only 4 data points. So by nature, you are less volatile, right? But the valuations, I think, just reflect much more the financial development of the companies and not necessarily the in and out, the quick emotional moves that you might have on the public side. And that's why we think it's definitely, after now 1.5 years of stress, not necessarily overvalued. And look, there is absolutely no motivation and no benefit for private equity managers to have inflated valuations, because what you want to show at the exit is the uplift that I mentioned before, right? Last year, we saw the 20% uplift. I mean, no one wants to explain to investors, oh, look, we had it in the books for 2.5 times, but we sold it for 1.8. Doesn't look very good, and there's no motivation for PE managers to have those inflated valuations. So therefore, you know, I don't think that we have massively overvalued portfolios in the market. I mean, there are always exceptions for everything, but in general, we feel very comfortable that our portfolios are valued conservatively and fairly.
Benjamin, my penultimate question. I think there's broad consensus that private assets, and particularly private equity, has an important role to play in investment portfolios, broadly speaking. The PwC survey that was recently released also alluded to the important role that private assets will play, currently play and will play in investment portfolios. I think institutional investors have been along this path for some time now, broadly speaking. But there's also this development that's happening with specific reference to, let's say, the more retail or intermediary markets regarding gaining access to private assets. Could you maybe update our listeners on how the private equity industry is evolving to meet sort of the requirements of retail investors and intermediary investors?
Yes, definitely. There was, and there is a big shift happening. That often, as you might have heard all about, like the democratization of private assets or private equity in our discussion here today. So that is happening, and it's growing very, very fast, that area. And the reason for that, because in the past there were two major points that private equity or investors didn't like so much about private equity. The first one and overarching was illiquidity. And the second one also, like, often the kind of bit complex fee structure, many layers, hard to really grasp what's going on there. And we as Schroders launched roughly 4 years ago a fund that could tackle those two in a way that the illiquidity problem was solved with what we call kind of a semi-liquid structure. And you see many of those now popping up in the market. Those structures then often provide liquidity on a subscription level on a monthly basis and redemption on a quarterly basis. That's a bit the standard in the market now. And we also have products offering that. And people like that because it gives in a normal environment really the opportunity, possibility to get liquidity in a death, disease, divorce case or whatever could happen in the family, right? You want to act, and that gives you flexibility. And on the free structure side, we also try to make it as easy as possible on that side to just say, like, look, we have a management fee and no other fee layer on top, no performance fee, no special fee, straight and simple. And those are the two pain points I think that people had in the past. And if you can solve them, or you can offer something that works around that, we saw a really good and great demand for it, and it's a great new product range that we were able to offer to the market here, and it really opens up that market that was almost closed for decades.
Thanks very much, Benjamin. Perhaps in closing, could you maybe just highlight two or three things, areas, key areas or developments that you're keeping your eyes on regarding the private equity industry, given that you have a global purview, you and your team, looking at the US, Europe, and Asia and the rest of the world?
I mean, definitely the sector mix that I mentioned before in a portfolio today probably defines very, very much if you are or if you have successful performance or not. A portfolio that has more, let's say, mission critical asset light, what I mentioned before, resilient, less cyclical business in there, shows really great performance. Healthcare is a topic we like a lot, and there are also currently a lot of developments, maybe a bit going away from the healthcare services world to the more complex outsource contractual and developing space also for the medtech segments. This is really exciting. We talked about AI, but it doesn't have to be the most extreme AI case, but technology is becoming part or almost infiltrating all other sectors. I mean, today, the most attractive consumer businesses, the most attractive healthcare businesses, even more the industrial companies that are interesting, they have a strong tech element or tech-enabled element. And this makes them then not only disruptive, interesting right now, but it also makes them a really, really interesting target to buy in 5 years. And last but not least, sustainability. Sustainability is becoming a bigger and bigger topic. extreme in Europe, but more and more also in the US and the rest of the world. And what I like about the topic is that we can see now with our direct co-investment portfolio, what we can see here is that the deals that we can link to the sustainability goals, development goals, that those deals, and not only to the goals, but also to the underlying targets, that those deals, it's roughly 140 out of a portfolio of 220, they clearly outperform on a realized, unrealized basis, but even more on a realized basis, they outperform the deals that cannot be linked. And this makes a lot of sense to me, because if you look at the development goals, the UN SDGs, those are long-term trends, mega trends, however you want to call them. But if you find deals that have that tailwind from those overall trends, that pays off, and that makes them more interesting targets in 5 years. And this is one thing that people think more and more about it. Not only how I buy something today, but how attractive and who's going to be the buyer in 5 years. That's also a key question.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Benjamin. I think we're going to have to leave it there. I suppose in summary, we've seen improved access to private equity products with the evolution of product development that you've alluded to. So even though capital raising, perhaps even exits, may be a bit challenged at the moment, private equity is still a very, very interesting asset class for our investors to look at, subject to the disciplined and repeatable investment process you referred to. Benjamin, always good to have you sharing your insights with our investors.
Thank you. Bye.
And thank you for dialing into another episode of the Schroders Global Markets Perspective. That was Benjamin Ault, the global head of our private equity portfolios at Schroders Capital. Looking forward to having you all again on the next podcast. See you soon. Take care and bye-bye.
The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance and may not be repeated. Schroders Investment Management Limited is an authorized financial services provider. FSP number 48998, registration number 01893220, incorporated in England and Wales. The information is not an offer, solicitation or recommendation. Any funds, services or products mentioned might not be appropriate for all listeners. Please speak to a financial advisor if you are unsure as to the suitability of any investment.
The forecasts included are not guaranteed. They are provided only as at the date of issue and should not be relied upon. Our forecasts are based on our own assumptions, which may change. We accept no responsibility for any errors of fact or opinion and assume no obligation to provide you with any changes to our assumptions or forecasts. Forecasts and assumptions may be affected by external, economic, or other factors.
Disclosures and risk factors. Collective investment schemes are generally medium to long-term investments. The value of participatory interest or the investments may go down as well as up. Past performance is not necessarily a guide to future performance. Collective investment schemes are traded at ruling prices and can engage in borrowing and scrip lending. A schedule of fees and charges and maximum commissions is available on request from the manager. The manager does not provide any guarantee either with respect to the capital or the return of a portfolio. The manager has a right to close the portfolio to new investors in order to manage it more efficiently in accordance with its mandate.